legacy. For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Hello and welcome to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything in the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and alongside me, my brother Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Today is Thursday, December 13th. We are at episode 9, winding down 2018, but the show is staying the same. Let's get right into it with the Red Sox.
So the first story of today for the 2018 World Series champion Boston Red Sox is this week they said they're not looking to spend big on a closer, and in my mind that basically kind of shuts out the idea of Craig Kimbrel coming back. What do you think about all this?
Yeah, so we have a quote here from the owner, Dave Dombrowski. Our payroll is pretty high at this point, so without getting specific on him, we're not looking to make a big expenditure in that area. So read that as you may. And to me, that means they don't want to pay Kimbrel what he wants. Kimbrel wants something like over $100 million, and he wants a long-term deal. We're talking 5 or 6 years here. So they're not going to sign him.
Yeah, he's an older guy. He already made $13 million last year and probably looking to make more, long contract. And I just don't think that's what the Red Sox are looking for right now. And that kind of, we can lead into this next thing a little bit and kind of use that as reference. But Joe Kelly actually today officially signed a 3-year, $25 million contract with the 2018 World Series champion losers, the Los Angeles Dodgers. So that was definitely a disappointment from my end. He was one of the players we've been talking about for a while, waiting to see him come back, and we're not going to see him next year. I'm very sad, but that also means that we're not going to see him at closer. So now where do we go from here?
Yeah, I was really bummed when I got the notification this morning. I don't know if it's 100% official yet. I think they're still pending a physical, but there's usually no issue with that. Again, I was surprised because it was only $25 million. You feel like someone coming off such a huge World Series win would, these guys would want more than that. But I guess maybe he just wanted to be in LA. I don't know. I can't speak for him. I'm not him. Definitely a guy I'm sad to see go. But this puts us in even more of a predicament now that we're pretty much saying we're not going to sign Kimbrel. Joe Kelly was my obvious pick for become the closer. Now we have to look at someone like Barnes or Brazier even.
Yeah, and I took the liberty of actually checking out what closers are on free agency. And that being said, it's a very specific position, and there's a good chance we could pick someone up who's a reliever and then have them work as a closer. But there's not a lot of people out there. There were less than 10 names. One of them was Craig Kimbrel. So if we take him off the list, there's a very limited pool of free agents. That's obviously just one avenue. So maybe looking into a trade. And in a trade scenario, who are you thinking that we might give up?
I don't know. It's tough. I mean, there's no one I really want to see go, but I don't know. I don't think trading is going to be the answer for our closer. I think they will most likely get someone free agency, whether they are a specific closer or not, or just a reliever of some kind, and work them into that closer position. We did see a little bit of variance toward the end of the year with them using other options at Craig Kimbrel. So it's just a matter of who's available, I guess.
All right, and kind of moving on from the whole closer situation, some other news coming this week, and that is that Mookie Betts is moving to second in the batting lineup.
Yeah, so this came out of some sort of meeting that Cora had earlier in the week, and he announced that Benintendi will actually be leading off this year. Obviously, things are subject to change depending who's in, who's out during the games, but it looks like Benintendi is going to get the nod for the leadoff spot, at least starting the 2019 season. And just to give you some background here, Benintendi did hit leadoff a couple of times in 2018, 21 to be precise. And this mostly came where Betts was on the disabled list for with an injury or whatever. But in those 21 times, he hit 322 with 5 home runs and 15 RBIs. So pretty solid guy to have leading off. I mean, either him and Mookie. I think the idea, though, is they want a guy on base when Mookie gets up to hit.
Yeah, that was my obvious kind of why they're doing this. I mean, this Benintendi, when he was in that leadoff position, an OPS just short of 1,000. So very strong offensive hitter, but he's a guy that obviously can get on base and has the speed for sure. And then you're right, with Mookie Betts, a bigger bat, at least looking at last year, coming up behind him, I think it's better than trying to get Mookie swing for the fences on the first, you know, first at bat of the game and just work that first inning, get runners on base, and such a strong start to that lineup that I think it'll be interesting to see the dynamic of Benintendi hitting first and Mookie second, but I am interested to see if it works out, and if it doesn't, if they just kind of go back to what they did last year.
So I have to quickly correct myself from earlier, because I know there's probably someone listening who is thinking I'm an idiot. Dave Dombrowski is the general manager of the Red Sox. I misspoke. John Henry obviously being the owner. But to get back into the Mookie Betts thing, again, we're still 4 months from seeing regular season baseball, or 3.5 now, I guess, played. So still subject to change kind of thing. That might just be an idea they're throwing around right now. And again, it depends on who's healthy and who's ready to go for the beginning of the season. Presumably, we have Dustin Pedroia coming back as well. That's something we might be able to get into maybe next week, see where he's at, see what he's been going through this last couple of months. Whether it's Benintendi hitting first or Mookie Betts, it doesn't really matter. All these guys earned that spot. So excited to see what happens going forward.
Yeah, my guess is spring training will probably see quite a bit of variation, just trying out Benintendi in first, maybe putting Mookie back up in the leadoff. And like you said, maybe even experimenting with other players that we haven't really considered for that leadoff position. But whatever it is, I'm sure the Red Sox will have it worked out come opening day of 2019. And moving on from all of that Red Sox talk, we actually have a new segment in today's show.
Yes, we are excited to bring you guys something different, something to add a little bit more character. Pretty basic, but you can expect more of these new segments going forward, hopefully in the future. Let's get it started with this one. Is going to be called Today in Sports History. So we're just going to shoot a quick little fact at you to bring you some more knowledge as you listen throughout the podcast. So we actually have two here today, one kind of pertaining to Boston, one a bigger overall fact. So today in 1936, the Boston Redskins, actually, as they were named, the NFL team, lost to the Packers 21-6, and that is when they moved to Washington, D.C. and became the Washington Redskins. The second one we have is in 1956, the Dodgers actually traded Jackie Robinson to the Giants for a pitcher and a sum of $35,000, but Robinson would actually retire as he didn't want to be traded.
Oh, thank you for that. Add some variety to the show, a new segment. So something to look forward to. Maybe it won't line up that we have, you know, as many facts every single week, but it's something new and exciting to add. And we will move forward to the Boston Celtics, who have been on a roll. And I'm actually excited to talk about them because they haven't sucked this week.
No, they have been on an absolute tear, currently on a 6-game win streak right now. But before we get into maybe the nitty-gritty, let's take a look back at the games throughout the week.
So the game we were talking about last week when we recorded was the game against the Knicks, which was a 128-100 victory for the Celtics. 28-point victory margin, that's pretty good. A lot, you know, bigger of a win than where you've been used to seeing. But then the Celtics decided to just outdo themselves on Saturday, when they won 133-77 against the Chicago Bulls. And that was actually the largest margin of victory in the franchise history for the Boston Celtics.
We'll put a pin in that one. Definitely something we want to come back to there. Monday versus the Pelicans, I was actually at this game. A nice 113-100 win over New Orleans. And just last night, the Celtics were able to edge out a 130-125 victory over the Washington Wizards in overtime.
All right, like you said, coming back to the Bulls, an incredible game played by the Celtics, starting the game on a 17-0 run. And this was one of those games where right off the bat you saw the Celtics come out strong, and you just, they're playing their game, they got ahead, and really the rest is history from there.
So Daniel Theis was actually plus 50 in the game. That is one of the highest plus minuses recorded in like an NBA game, the record being 57. So solid night with 22 points. Jaylen Brown had 23 coming off the bench. And we were missing our bigs with Horford and Baines. So now we need to talk about how, yes, the Celtics played phenomenal and they scored a ton of points, but is this the Celtics asserting their dominance of the East, or is this just them just picking on what is a very weak Bulls team?
I'd say it's a little bit of both. They were coming off at that point, had a 4-game win streak going, so they're feeling it a little bit for sure, and looking to make a statement with this victory for sure. But if you watched the game, you'd see in the fourth quarter, they put in a lot of their third line guys, and those guys were even playing really well. Shemi Ojale was out there and a couple of other guys, and just they were playing incredible basketball too and playing great defense, getting points on offense and not letting off the gas in this game, which I think is good, was great for the Celtics morale. I felt a little bad for the Bulls in the end, but I think it was great for the Celtics to just get the feeling of playing with the lead, getting different guys in the rotation out on the court for some good minutes, and just playing good basketball.
So getting a little bit more in depth with the Pelicans game this past Monday, again, we saw Horford and Hayward out. We'll get into the Horford thing a little bit because he's going to be out for at least a little while, it looks like. But Brown came off the bench this game, even with those two out. Baines was also out, so still a different look kind of, but Marcus Morris drops 31, Tatum 21, and Brown 19 again coming off the bench. Brown looked good. He was not like the usual sitting around the perimeter shooting like he does. He did hit at least one three. He might have hit more, but he was aggressive. He was not afraid to drive to the hoop, go in, make some hard baskets, go in, maybe pivot, take a little jump, a little turnaround shot there. And this was something I think we need to see more of. I think we need to see Brown play aggressive. I want him to go to the hoop, attack the basket, be like guys like LeBron, like Russell Westbrook, who love to go at the rim. And even if they don't get the basket, they're getting the free throws and they're still upping their production.
Yeah, and when I think of Jaylen Brown, I think of just such an athletic basketball player that he has the athleticism to make those plays. And maybe when he's not doing the best shooting, and we've talked about that plenty in the past, he has the ability and the physicality to get in the paint, get those hard baskets like you talked about. If not, draw the foul, get the free throws. And I've really liked this look of Jaylen Brown coming off the bench. He's looking to get a lot more comfortable. He's had great production, putting up quite a few points in each of the last couple games he's played in. And I'm really starting to like how Jaylen Brown is playing basketball again.
So we continue this run into Wednesday last night with a OT win against the Wizards. The Wizards didn't start the year great. We talked about this last week, I think, but they have been definitely stepping it up lately. It was good for the Celtics to continue their win streak. You got to beat the weaker teams too. We talk about it all the time. You got to play well in primetime, but you still got to get those games you're expected to win. So a big third quarter really helped us out, and then Kyrie in overtime was just incredible.
Yeah, Kyrie, like you said, hit two clutch three-pointers to basically put this game on ice. Marcus Morris, another notable figure like he has been all year, putting up 27 points. And just was good to kind of get ahead a little bit in that overtime. And the Celtics were playing from behind for quite a bit in this game. The whole first half they were trailing. Like you said, they had that really dominant third quarter and managed to hold on for this one. And I'm glad they did. The Wizards, like we said, a weaker team earlier in the year, but have really turned it around. But keeping the win streak alive, staying at six games strong right now. But I think also in that game, a lot of guys out with injury, and it's starting to beg the question, are these guys just resting, or should we have a concern that we're looking at a lot of injured players?
So Horford's the big one in my mind. We saw Jaylen Brown play earlier in the week. Baines, I think, is just out because of rest. Kyrie played well, so he's been in. Horford is the one that sticks out to me with maybe being a concern. Even Hayward, I can see this as Brad Stevens just resting him. And I think there also have been the players have been sick. There's an illness going around, it looks like, within the team, with Jaylen sitting out with an illness one of these last games, as well as Hayward. But Horford, like I said, the one that sticks out to me. In my mind, in basketball, it's your big men you got to look out for with the small injuries that plague them for a long time. So with Horford being out just a couple of games, and I think a statement came out either from someone at the Celtics or Brad Stevens himself, how Horford has a knee injury and that it is going to keep him out for a little while. They didn't really specify a time frame there. So that begs the question, is he fighting something? And I think definitely something we need to keep an eye on going forward. They've shown they can play extremely well without their key guys. I mean, dropping 133, 128, 113 without some of their key guys. So the production is there. But Horford, a guy we are definitely going to need going down the stretch, and especially come the end of the season. Granted, we're approaching halfway now, but some guy we need to get healthy.
I think for sure Horford, a name that we need to get back at some point. I think it's smart now to not push him too hard, especially we did have a bit of an easier week. If you look back, teams like the Knicks, the Bulls, obviously we know how that one went. The Wizards, who were a weaker team earlier on, but it's smart to give him the rest now. Don't force him to play games and make this injury last way longer than it should. I think it's smart to keep him out for now. We have played well, but also Horford's one of those guys that we have on a good contract. And he's not supposed to be the star of the show. He's a fundamental piece on the offense, but he isn't a star of the show. So it's not like every game he sits out, it's like, why is he out? This guy's supposed to be carrying the team. Someone like Kyrie, someone like Gordon Hayward, even though he's dealt with injury and probably a lot of rest recently. But Kyrie Irving, if you see him sitting out, it's a big name that we picked up, spent a lot of money on, traded a lot for. But I think Horford, a key guy, but someone that it's not awful to see him sitting on the bench a little bit, taking some time off to deal with his injury so he can get back stronger and not make this into something way worse than it needs to be.
And before we look at the week ahead here, I just wanted to touch briefly on maybe just the Eastern Conference as a whole. We talked about, I know, the beginning of the year, how we thought the Celtics were going to stand out as a super team of the East. Right now, and I know we did have a little bit of a rough patch there a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Right now, the Celtics are sitting at fifth in the Eastern Conference at 17-10. And in my mind, four of the four teams that are ahead of us, with the Raptors, Bucks, 76ers, and Pacers, I'm not concerned with anyone but the Raptors. If you have seen the Raptors play recently, and especially their game last night at Golden State, they have been playing some incredible basketball. Even without Kawhi Leonard in the last couple of games, they are playing incredible. And to me, that is the one team that stands out in the East that poses a threat to a serious threat to the Celtics.
Like you said, I think if we take a step back, kind of cut out that really rough patch of the Celtics season, that when we've played 82 games, it's all said and done, that will be just a very slim portion of the season. But right now, because we haven't played as many games, it's obviously going to stand out more. But I think if you cut that out, we're right up there with teams like the Bucks, the 76ers, the Pacers that are right ahead of us. And you give or take those couple of games, a lot can shift around in that conference. But like you said, the Toronto Raptors looking like a very dangerous team this year, playing how well they did against the Golden State Warriors and kind of making the Eastern Conference look like it's not to be taken as a joke anymore. I know a lot of speculation last year and this year that the East is way easier. You know, one good team has a paved road right to the finals. But I think it really could be in contention this year that maybe we don't see the Golden State Warriors sweeping the finals again, which I can't argue with. I would love to actually see some competition there. But I think it's going to be good coming down the stretch with a lot of competition in the top of the Eastern Conference.
definitely something I don't think many people were expecting, but nothing we can do but just sit back and enjoy what is going to be a very interesting season of basketball, I think, going forward here. So now let's get into the week ahead. Again, kind of a weaker, some weaker teams we're seeing this week. We have Friday, we're at home versus the Atlanta Hawks, who are sitting the second lowest spot in the East. Then Saturday, we're at Detroit, who are about middle of the pack. And then Wednesday, we're at home versus the Phoenix Suns, who right now are just sitting at 4-24, kind of the laughing stock of the NBA right now. So look for the Celtics to continue this role going forward.
And especially that Wednesday game, you said the Phoenix Suns looking like a weaker team. Also, their probably best player, Devin Booker, has been dealing with injury recently. So especially if he's not playing, I would say look for that to be a pretty easy victory for this team. But hopefully just continuing the win streak, keep the momentum rolling. This is the run that we said they need to go on, and I just want to see it keep going, keep winning games, slowly work our way back up the East, and kind of get back to where I think everyone thought we would be at the beginning of this season.
Let's do it like we always do on the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast here and flip to the other team that shares the TD Garden in the Boston Bruins. James, if you want to take us through the past week.
So looking back, Thursday's game on December 6th, we lost 3-2 to Tampa Bay. Saturday, a 6-3 pretty dominant win over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Sunday, an overtime win in Ottawa. And this past Tuesday, a 4-3 win against the Arizona Coyotes, kind of highlighted by a stretch of turning a 0-2 deficit into a 4-2 lead in, I think, was just over 5 minutes.
I remember watching the beginning of the game with the Bruins going down 0-2, and then I stepped out for 20 minutes and just the notifications on my phone. Oh, it's 1-2. Oh, now it's 2-2. Oh, we took the lead, it's 3-2. And another one, it's 4-2. And they gave a goal back late there. Just a crazy run of events there. But maybe let's go through each game here. Thursday, you said, lost 3-2 against the team that is leading the Eastern Conference in the Tampa Bay. So a very strong team there. And then, like you said, a dominant victory over the Maple Leafs. I believe it was 5-1 at one point. So kind of slipping there in the end. But a very reassuring victory. And then the overtime win versus Ottawa, who not playing phenomenal hockey right now. And then brings us back to the win versus the Coyotes. And maybe let's talk about how David Backes took a skate to the face in that game.
And then came back in. I think this is just the peak of hockey players being some of the toughest and craziest people to ever walk this earth. We've seen everything. People taking pucks to the face, stick to the face. This man literally took a blade to the face, just held his hand to his face, skated off, blood pouring off his face, and came back in the next period. I don't know what they do to these people, what they give them, but they just they want to be in the game. And it's kind of crazy to see something like this where a guy takes a skate to the face and then just boom, right back in the game.
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember watching and saw him go down and everything. It just, it looked like a high stick in the run of play and everything. So you're like, oh, they'll get the penalty, whatever. And then they showed a close up of him skating off, holding, literally just dripping blood off of his face. So then they showed the replay. Sure enough, you saw the skate come up. Unfortunately, they didn't get a penalty out of it because there really isn't a penalty. It's just one of those fluke things that happens kind of thing. But especially when a skate comes near anything major in hockey, you just got to be glad that he's all right.
And looking into this event a little bit, trying to find a good story that we could talk about here on the podcast, I managed to stumble upon a USA Today article that pretty much outlines how David Backes is one of the unluckiest people ever. And in this article, it talks about how, you know, he took a skate to the face and he was actually okay. But then it goes into detail his last year's run of bad luck, which included also getting cut by a skate in the leg last year, suffering a concussion, missing 12 games because part of his colon got removed, and also being suspended for 3 games. So this guy, he can't seem to get a break, but very glad he's okay with this injury. But my man, David Backes, just really cannot catch a break from these horrible things happening to him. So hopefully he's good for the rest of the season.
Speaking of injuries, Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara, two of the major guys, the captain and assistant captain, actually, who have been out for the past couple of weeks. Via the Bruins Twitter, it was posted today that they are close to returns to practice. So that doesn't really give us a real timetable, but it's nice to know that they are almost to the point where they're feeling good enough to get out on the ice and just get around with the team some more.
Yeah, I mean, two major guys that we talked about when they went down with injuries, how crucial they are to this Bruins team, and just knowing that they're almost even back to practice is better news than we've expected in the past. So hopefully seeing those guys, you know, get back in the progressions of being in practice, getting on skates, eventually, you know, taking shots and really just kind of coming back and hopefully really rounding out this team, which actually did surprisingly well this week, I will say. Coming, you know, 3-1 through the four games they had in the past week without two of their major guys. So hopefully when these guys come back, round out that that Bruins team and really make a push going towards the middle of the season.
So going back to the Winter Classic, which we touched on last week, how it will be the Bruins at the Blackhawks. It'll be played on New Year's Day, 1 p.m. at Notre Dame Stadium. An article came out this week through Nesson how they will be using color-changing pucks. And James, you're the one who actually showed this to me. We both got kind of a laugh at it because I think we misinterpreted it. But do you want to take us through it?
So I was looking around for other, you know, Bruins news to talk about. And this was an interesting article that came up. And so the Bruins are actually going to use, like you said, color-changing pucks during this Winter Classic. And what I originally thought this meant was the puck was a completely different color and would change from one to another. And so they said the pucks will change from purple to clear, and that indicates when the officials should change them. So for those of you that don't know, in hockey, they actually freeze the pucks. It reduces the pucks bouncing around as much, and it just speeds up the rate of play and everything. So for this idea, they freeze the pucks, and they stay purple. When they are clear, it indicates that they need to be changed. So me not seeing a visual representation with this article, I assume that we start with a just purple puck, and it turns clear. And I think the glaringly obvious question is, how would they see a clear puck? And I think that's where our humor out of this situation came from. Clearly, that's not actually what happens. It's just a black puck. The logo is what changes colors. But I think they kind of missed out on a really funny opportunity there. I don't know about you, but
definitely would not have gone over well. They would have lost the puck once and that would have been it. They would have gone back to the regular black colored pucks. But so to just put this into context, the puck will still be black, but the logo and everything will be purple, and that will change to clear, or what I presume will more be like a white color when the puck is ready to be changed. Overall, a cool idea, just a visual indicator to the refs to change these pucks out. And something we might see going forward in the NHL, who knows?
Yeah, so what's cool is that this article really chalked it up to be like a major step forward for technology, but bottom of the article, they just say that like literally beer cans have been using this technology for 10 years, so the NHL is really behind if you think about it, but it's cool to see them finally catching up to, you know, modern beer companies.
So looking at the week ahead for the Boston Bruins, kind of some tough games here. On Friday, so tomorrow, we'll see the Pittsburgh Penguins, who aren't playing the best hockey, but they're middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference. And then on Sunday, we'll see the Buffalo Sabres, who are having a very good year. And then Monday, so back-to-back games there, we will see the Montreal Canadiens, great rivalry there. The Canadiens weren't, again, playing the best hockey, but they've definitely turned it around. They're one spot lower in the Eastern Conference than the Bruins. And then finally on Thursday, we will see the Anaheim Ducks, who are up there in the Western Conference. So some tough games coming forward here. Could be a very telling week. Could be a very rough week, especially without some of our key guys that we mentioned before.
And a quick look before we move on. The Boston Bruins are also sitting at fifth in the Eastern Conference behind Washington, Buffalo, Toronto, and Tampa Bay. They are quite a few points back, but nothing they can't make up a couple of spots on, you know, moving forward in the season. But I think a great position to be in considering the circumstances of injury and what they've dealt with so far this year. And I think hopefully just look for more of the same moving forward. You know, if we can pick up 3 wins, maybe drop a game, that's okay. And I'd be happy with that moving forward.
And so I think that is probably going to do it for us on the podcast here. Nothing else to talk about, right?
Hold on. As much as I would like to forget, there's also this other team that we apparently like still called the New England Patriots.
Oh, that is right. Unfortunately, during the past week, I had completely erased the Patriots from my memory, but I guess we do have to talk about it. Just a heartbreak loss in Miami on the last play. I'm sure if you didn't watch the game, you heard about it or saw the... I don't even know what to say.
Well, I got a couple of things. Disappointed comes to mind. I know last week I mostly did the Patriots segment, and I talked about, you know, the record in Miami, and that was the big story going into Miami. Brady's 7-9 now 7-10, but 7-9 going into Miami. Is he going to be able to pull out a victory in this one? And let's be honest, the Patriots offense played well. The defense was just the dumpster of burning garbage. I'm so mad at what happened, and the existence of social media doesn't help this, seeing the Miami Miracle probably 10 times within 30 minutes of it happening. I was watching the game with my buddies. We sat there looking at each other with just the stupidest looks on our faces. We had no clue what to think. I even called you, and I had some hot takes that I believe included me saying we should trade Rob Gronkowski and fire Steven Gostkowski. But anyways, what were your thoughts on this hell of a disappointing game in Miami?
Yeah, so the big thing that comes to mind for me is, why was the game this close? Why were the Miami Dolphins within striking distance, even if it was the last play? Okay.
A couple things come to mind. Steven Gostkowski accounted for 4 missed points. The originally missed extra point, missed a field goal, and then actually pretty much right before this play went down, the Patriots whiffed on an opportunity to put up 7, only ended up settling for the field goal with great starting field position, and that led to their aquatic demise.
So just to take you through that, what my afternoon was, I watched most of the game, and then I did step away toward the end, but I was watching on my phone. But as the phone is streaming, you are a little bit behind. You actually weren't the first person to contact me. I got a text from my roommate that said, "Are you watching the Patriots?" And I was like, "Yeah, like they're about to kick off. Like, hang on." And I knew in the back of my mind, I was like, "There's no way. There's no way he's going to say what I think he's going to say." Sure enough, I watched the last play unfold and I texted him back. I was like, "You've got to be kidding me." Not 5 minutes later, you and I are on the phone. You're yelling at me how it... I don't even think you said trade. I think you said drop Rob Gronkowski and Steven Gostkowski. You were heated. We had a very brief 5-minute conversation in which you were just... I wasn't next to you, but I could feel how angry you were through the phone. It was kind of a funny phone call.
The worst part of that play was the fact that... So they started on what? Their own 30, roughly, you'd say. This is a 60-yard play, so... about their own 30, 40, somewhere in there. And they had about 10 seconds left on the clock. So the idea is that they'd go one short play, go out of bounds, take the Hail Mary. And so we see Ryan Tannehill drops back and throws a pass right over the middle. And the last words out of my mouth were, "He threw it over the middle. What an idiot." And then... it happened. They threw the ball back and forth and ran right back past Rob Gronkowski's stumbling, baboon-looking self and right into the end zone.
So, again, we have to touch on this, too. What is Rob Gronkowski doing out there on the last play where the chances that Ryan Tannehill throws the ball 70 yards to the end zone are almost non-existent? What is he doing out there on that play?
The thought is obviously that he's there for the Hail Mary. And I can say, okay, I understand why he's there for the Hail Mary. He's a big dude, doesn't know how to play defense, but he can take up space, which is what he's basically there to do. But they interviewed everyone in the locker room, and every single defender that they interviewed said, yeah, we knew that was going to be a pitch play. We knew that they weren't going to throw the ball deep. So what the heck is Rob Gronkowski doing out there? You take out Devin McCourty, the best tackler, the safety of this team's defense for Rob Gronkowski, who can't run in a straight line without falling over? I don't know, and I know it was Belichick's decision. I don't know what he's thinking on this play. He knows it's not a Hail Mary. Everyone knows it's not a Hail Mary. Why is Rob Gronkowski out there? I just don't know.
In his defense, the Patriots missed two or three tackles on the ball handler before that. So even if someone else is out there, how do you not just, you got it. Like, everyone on the field should be putting 115% into getting the last guy down. Like, how are they not surrounding this man with the ball and just eating him up 11-on-1? Like, I don't understand why the tackles weren't made before that. Why did we even have to see him fall on his face, and why did we have to see them win this game?
I mean, I have to give credit where credit is due. There was great blocking. If you watch back, there's two or three key blocks thrown by Miami other offensive players, and Kenyon Drake did an amazing job running the ball, and I'll give him that, but he's on the sideline. Push the man. You push him, he steps out of bounds, game's over. But just broken tackles, and it's something that, you know, so many things have to go right for one team, wrong for the other, and that's exactly what happened this week, which is sad because a win this week meant the Patriots clinched the playoffs, a million other things, and I don't have to see that stupid Miami miracle. It's not even a miracle. Our team's just bad. Don't have to see that all over social media. The only light at the very end of this very, very dark long tunnel is that the Pittsburgh Steelers actually managed to lose to the Raiders. They actually managed to lose to the Raiders, which is, that honestly has to take effort at this point. So what do you expect moving forward from them next week at home against our Patriots?
I don't think anything changes. I think we're going to take care of the rest of this season through the Steelers and then the Jets and Buffalo, or Buffalo and Jets in the reverse order. Sorry. And we'll get the bye in the playoffs. We'll make it to the AFC Championship game. We'll get into that in a couple of minutes now, but, nothing changes in my mind. They're gonna beat Pittsburgh. They're gonna beat the two weaker teams in their division. This was just an unfortunate setback. And in my mind, it doesn't really mean a whole lot about the Patriots as a whole. Like you said, a lot of things had to go right and a lot of things had to go wrong. That's what happened. It's one play. It doesn't define their season. I don't think this will be the defining play in their season. They just got to get back to it.
And I think the two times the Patriots play their best football is coming off of a bye week and after a loss that they should not have had. And I think coming off of this, they're going to be angry. They want to win this football game more than anything. I think they take that energy into Pittsburgh. James Conner's out, so the run game is crippled. And if we're going to play this defense like we did against the Vikings, force them to run the ball. That's going to be their weaker suit. Force them to run the ball. Take away Antonio Brown, take away Juju Smith-Schuster, and make him play this game on the ground. And I think we have this wrapped up. Like you said, we got two easy games in Buffalo and the Jets in 16 and 17. Get us two easy wins. Basically just secure our spot in the playoffs. And then I think, like I said, the other time they played the strongest football is coming off a bye week. So give them that week a rest. They're bye week in the playoffs, and they go to the playoffs. And you said hopefully getting to the AFC Championship game. But that poses the question. There's a very good chance that they're not getting home field advantage in the AFC Championship game. Do you think this matters?
So let's talk about that chance for a second. The Kansas City Chiefs and the Chargers, the two teams ahead of the Patriots in the AFC, actually play tonight. I don't see them getting the home field advantage. So which means we're going to have to go into Kansas City, most likely, and play against a red-hot Kansas City team. Now, do I think this matters? Yes, a little bit, but not enough. I still think the Patriots have the knowledge, they have the depth, and especially they have this experience over this Kansas City team to get the win in the AFC Championship game when it comes down to it. The defense is going to have to show up. We can't have any of these letting up 34 points to Miami. Like, we can't be doing this. The defense has to play lockdown. Like, we have to play our best football But I think our best football is still better than the Kansas City Chiefs' best football, whether we are in our stadium or theirs.
I'm with you here. I think that playing in Arrowhead, that's what it comes down to. So basically the way this can go down is we either play in Arrowhead against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game, or if they fall earlier, then we assume that home field advantage, presumably being the second seed in the AFC. So we either get home field or we're playing at Arrowhead against, like you said, this very hot Kansas City team. They did lose out on Kareem Hunt. Spencer Ware, their backup, also dealing with injury now. So once again, this is going to be a game where you got to take the big passing targets out of the game, which is tough with players as incredible as Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And I know I got into this last week as well, but you got to force him to play the ground game. And you have to exploit every weakness you can find in Pat Mahomes, which is going to be difficult because it doesn't seem like there's many. But I think that it isn't enough to best the Patriots. But moving on from that, my fear is going to be the defense again this year. And it was the same story last year. We had the offense. It was there. But you can't have a defense giving up 40 points in a Super Bowl. And if it comes down to it, that's going to be my ultimate fear moving forward.
To be fair, the Chiefs and Rams showed that you cannot play defense, and one of you will still win the football game in that brutal Monday Night Football game a couple of weeks ago. But this is all speculation still. We are still a good 4, 5, 6 weeks out from the AFC Championship game. I don't know when it is exactly. We have 3 more weeks of the regular season to get through now, and then 2 weeks of playoffs before we'll see them. So we're still a ways out. So many things could change here. The Chiefs could lose their next 3 games. Who knows? Like, anything is possible. We could lose again, and it could be just heartbreak all over again. So this is speculation. But if things unfold like I think most people think they will, that's what we'll be looking at the next 5 weeks of football.
And let's be honest, Adon, it is getting to the best time of the year. It's getting where playoffs are on the line. We get a picture of who's making it for AFC, who's making it for NFC. We get the situations. How are these teams getting into the playoffs? What do they need to happen? We got football on Saturdays coming up. That's pretty exciting because now you get Thursday night, Saturday night, or Saturday during the day, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday night. There's football on all the time now. So honestly, one of my favorite parts of this season is just kind of seeing it wrap up, getting that playoff picture. So a sad, sad week like we started out for the New England Patriots. But moving forward, it really is a great time in the football season. I am truly really excited to see where this team goes in the last 3 weeks of regular season.
Just this week ahead in general, so much is going down in Boston sports. You got the Bruins and Celtics with some telling weeks coming forward. You got the Red Sox looking to secure a closer, and you got the Patriots looking to get back on the wagon and continue their playoff push. But I think that just about does it for us here today. James, take us away.
So if you guys did enjoy this podcast at all, let us know how we're doing. Leave us a rating. Leave us comments if it allows for that on the platform you are listening on. We want to know if we're doing a good job, what we could do better, what you guys like about the show, what could be changed. If you guys like the new segments, if you want us to add more segments, any of that stuff, please do let us know. Do leave us a rating. It really does help us out and kind of gets the podcast out there for more people, grows the community. And it's something we love to see.
Speaking of growing the community, if you don't follow us on Twitter, you should. At Brady Bros Boston. That's where we're tweeting out when the episodes come out. It immediately, the second the episode is uploaded, the first thing we do is tweet it out. So if you want to be, even before subscribing to the podcast, like people who get that notification, you'll get it first if you follow us on Twitter. Again, at Brady Bros Boston. Not just announcing the podcast, but any Boston sports news we have, and whether it's through me or through another source that I'm retweeting kind of thing, just stay up to date with us there.
And if you would like to sponsor us, please do send us an email at bradybrosboston@gmail.com. We are open to work with just about anyone. It just helps us improve the quality of this show. And we're really, like I said, open to work with anyone for really anything. It would be a great help to us. Do not feel pressured to, but if you do want to sponsor us, it is there, brittybrosboston@gmail.com. Thank you guys again all for listening. We really do appreciate it. A couple good weeks coming up in Boston sports, so be sure to stick around. Be sure to tune in next week, same day, and we'll be there. So thank you guys all for listening. We'll see you next week.
See ya.